You're listening to Pacifica's Peace Watch. I'm Verna Avery Brown. After months of marching against the war on Iraq, protesters in Austin, Texas, have turned to more creative forms of resistance. Shannon Young from Pacifica Station KPFT in Houston has more from the state capitol's most recent anti-war demonstration.
Walking Bohemian Band of Hope, and we are walking from Tucson, Arizona to Washington, D.C. for peace.
When did you start in Tucson?
We started February 22nd.
About how many miles a day do y'all walk?
We walk about 25 miles a day, and we have a relay set up. We have a support car, so we walk and switch off the driving shift.
We're just trying to get the word out to local media to try to make people aware of what's going on.
What would you like to say to the media?
Well, we would like to say to, not to the media, but to the people. And the media is the way to get there. But we'd like to say to the people, hey, you know, we need to really realize that bombing people in any part of the world is not really going to help us have a more peaceful and safe and secure America. It's going to cause more problems than it's worth. And yeah, while Saddam's a bad person, does he really pose a threat, an immediate threat to America? Did he ever? Not really. They say, well, he could possibly maybe do something in 5 years down the road, but if that's our basis for invading another country, that is no way to go about and, you know, treat the rest of the world like, hey, you know, we think you're going to do something bad in 5 years, so that makes no sense. That's interesting right there. We get a lot of people at rallies in Tucson drive by. They honk at us, they get flashing peace signs for their SUV. It seems ironic to me. You know, we have these gas-guzzling machines. You wanna do something for peace? Ride a bike. Walk. Hey, we're walking to Washington. Come walk with us.
When do you expect to arrive in Washington?
We're arriving on Independence Day.
My name is Juniper, and we're with the Austin Spokes Council for Creative Direct Action. Today we have collected books to send to Kay Bailey Hutchinson to tell her that we have a great one right here called The Sexual Life of Women, to say to Kay Bailey Hutchinson that our government needs to be providing education, literature, the arts, elements of beautiful culture, and not bombs.
And you're passing out pens for people to sign the book.
They can write a message to Kay Bailey Hutchinson telling her what they believe in and how they want their tax dollars spent.
Black, Latino, Arab, Asian, and white. No Texas for no more, no more. Defend our civil rights.
I'm Peggy Austin with Bubbles Not Bombs.
And tell me a little bit about Bubbles Not Bombs.
Bubbles Not Bombs is basically a motion to, say, do a peaceful forest of bubbles. If you feel like playing, play with bubbles, not bombs. I was feeling that there's been some negative stuff going on, and I'm even trying to express myself without using any words like, you know, bad words or just negative energy kind of words. I think that the only way to actually come out with a good gesture is to actually create good feelings. We all need to breathe well and just keep on thinking good, positive thoughts rather than saying hell no. It's like, why don't we just say, let's have peace.
Shannon Young from Pacifica Station KPFT brought us that piece on creative forms of resistance in Austin, Texas. Well, While activists opposed to the war and the U.S. occupation of Iraq are employing all sorts of creative tactics to ensure that their voices get heard, some protesters are trying to find a meaningful message to convey now that the war is winding down. Leaders of the anti-war coalition Win Without War will gather for a two-day retreat later this week to discuss the group's future and the possible name change to Win Without Wars, an attempt to broaden the group's focus. Tom Andrews is the national director of Win Without War.
There are enormous challenges that we're facing as a nation. The administration is taking us in an extremely dangerous position. And I think that we as a movement have our work cut out for us. And we said from the very beginning of this effort that we needed to do everything possible to bring to the attention of the American people just how dangerous this situation was, not only with respect to an invasion of Iraq, but this overall policy that the administration is setting and the insecurity that it's going to create for this nation. We said that the military invasion portion, of course, the United States would prevail and should prevail in short order when you consider that the United States has the most powerful military in the history of the world, and it was up against a weak and impoverished country with a defense budget of less than 1% of our own. Of course, the invasion military phase was going to be one that would be won by the United States, but it is what it leads to. It's the insecurity it creates for we as Americans and for the international community. It's the violation of international law. It's taking on a challenge through military means that could have been successfully addressed in non-military means. It's the polarizing of the world against us, and it is setting a precedent of action outside of the United Nations and the Security Council that makes the world a much more dangerous place. This was our message before the invasion. This is our message now, and this will be our message in the weeks and months to come. The bottom line here is to beat the Bush Doctrine. We, as a country, are at a very important juncture. And as a network, as a coalition, it is very, very important that we organize and communicate with the American people about why this Bush Doctrine is against our interests, why it will lead to even more conflicts that are avoidable, conflicts that will fuel terrorism, conflicts that will further isolate us from our historic allies, conflicts that will continue to undermine the rule of law, that will replace the international rule of law with the international rule of war, how it will continue to heap even more costs on the backs of American people, how it will lead to even a greater suspension of our fundamental freedoms here at home, and how it will make us less secure. We are going to commit ourselves to delivering that message to Americans all across this country and engaging them in activities that will make it very clear to office holders in Washington that this is something that Americans feel very strongly about, and that we're willing to roll up our sleeves and go to work for.
Tom Andrews, National Director of the Anti-War Coalition, Win Without War. The United States' failure to gain UN approval before launching an invasion of Iraq has caused quite a stir in the international community, leading some observers to question just how long the U.S. can comfortably continue down the path of political and military unilateralism. KPFK's Sonali Kolhatkar recently spoke with Bob McKee, senior economist at the London-based Independent Strategy Think Tank, who offers his analysis of economic indicators that what he calls the U.S. empire is in decline.
Well, there's obviously a split of opinion. There's a number of people who consider that once the Iraq war is out of the way, that will create the conditions for faster growth and the recovery of consumer confidence in the U.S. And as we know, the U.S. is still by far the biggest economy in the world, and if the economy goes forward, it will help the rest of the world too. But I'd have to say that we're not so confident that will happen, that even if the Iraq war goes well and quickly, that it will be possible for the U.S. economy to recover very fast. The consumer seems to be dying both in the U.K. and the U.S., and investment is not coming through yet. Profits for corporations are still very low. And if we're going to have a very uncertain international world where the U.S. has to conduct a lot of defense and arms spending in order to reconstruct different parts of the world on its own, that's going to increase the burden for the U.S. economy and make it very difficult for it to get the sort of growth rates it needs to restore confidence.
In the article in The Guardian, the quote is that Independent Strategy believes that the U.S. shows many symptoms of an empire that is cresting. First, it sees deepening mistrust of the U.S. and predicts a rise in terrorism in reaction to U.S. unilateralism. So are you saying that we are maybe at a point where we're near the beginning of the decline of the U.S. empire?
Well, I think we certainly seem to have some symptoms of that, because we saw in the post-war period an international community coming together through the United Nations and other trade and investment organizations, which tried to globalize the world on the basis of a model which everybody could agree on that would help to make the world a better place. It seems that Iraq has set the tone possibly for a division now between how the world should progress, whether it should progress purely under the leadership and the hegemonic leadership of the U.S., where everybody follows the views of the U.S. about how to deal with the world and how to deal with enemies that might be in the way of the betterment of the world, or whether it's going to be through the process of consultation. And the split between the U.S. and Europe now seems to be quite final and significant. And perhaps we're moving to a world where the U.S. is going to make unilateral decisions. We're going to be in a world of uncertainty between multipolar blocks, China in the East, Europe and the U.S. and the American countries in the West. And that's not a good environment for world peace and for faster growth in the world.
With respect to within the country itself and the economy inside the country, I'm not sure how much you can tell us from your vantage point in London about where the internal economy of the United States is heading. And of course, along with it, it's going to be affecting the in world economy.
Well, indeed, if government starts to consume more of the available savings that American citizens have put into their banks and into their various investments, and that money has to go to government in order in particular to finance increased defense spending, a pretty unproductive way of developing an economy, then it's likely to slow down growth. And the deficits that the U.S. is now planning of over $400 billion this year, that's something like 4% of America's annual GDP. And as far as I can see, with the prospect of further defense and reconstruction costs coming up, that deficit is likely to reach 5% of GDP in the next year or two and continue at very high levels going forward, much higher even than European governments have been setting recently. I don't think that augurs well for growth rates, which everybody's hoping for that the U.S. will achieve. We're more likely to have growth rates closer to 1%, or even lower each year from now on, rather than 3%, which everybody's hoping for.
I want to ask you a little bit about the export of ideology and what part that plays in empire and what trend we see with the United States.
Yes, well, I think what you see when you have a very dominant economic power, it wants to promote its economic model around the world. And we've seen that particularly in the last 25 years, that the idea of globalization, that economies in Asia, in Latin America and elsewhere should move towards economic reform to reduce government, to deregulate their economies and allow the free movement of capital and trade across borders. That's the model that the U.S. has tried to set in order to drive economic growth forward throughout the world. It has had some success, but I think we're now in an environment where there seems to be a backlash against that. We see the growth of populism in Latin America. We see that China wants to furrow its own way in Asia and isn't necessarily going to be tied to the views of any world trade community. All that suggests that the American model is no longer getting the same popularity and support that it did, say, in the last 25 years.
Finally, Bob McKee, can you talk a little bit about what you see as being the most important aspect of, from the point of view of Americans, the standard of living that we employ today, how it's at complete odds with the rest of the world? In some sense, it's an unsustainable standard of living, and what that has to do with empire, and could that also be declining?
Yes, I think the key point here is that U.S. citizens have enjoyed, particularly in the last 10 years, considerable increases in GDP growth and also in their standards of living, particularly in the value of their property. That's really been financed not just by better profitability from U.S. corporations, that's begun to disappear, but also because foreigners have been prepared to invest quite heavily in the U.S. If foreigners no longer are convinced that the U.S. is going to deliver in terms of returns on their investment, they're beginning to cut back on that. And the U.S. is running a very sizable deficit with the rest of the world on trade, and that's going to create problems, I think, for U.S. citizens. It means that interest rates will probably be on the rise if the U.S. is going to maintain its current deficit it has with the rest of the world, or growth will have to slow. And above all, I think, this is where American citizens will really feel the pinch. They will see a very sharp decline in the dollar over the next few years, possibly something like 30 or 40%. So that means that going abroad, traveling abroad, investing abroad is going to be much more expensive, and all the goods that American citizens buy from abroad are also going to increase quite sharply.
Sonali Kolhatkar speaking with Bob McKee, senior economist at the London-based independent strategy think tank. Music is an art form almost everybody has access to and is therefore a powerful tool for conveying a message. During the build-up to the war in Iraq, musicians at home and abroad have expressed their opposition in song. Peace Not War is a compilation album produced in the United Kingdom featuring anti-war music by Midnight Oil, Public Enemy, Annie DeFranco, and Billy Bragg, among other big names. Less well-known artists are also crooning and strumming against military aggression. A handful of local Minneapolis artists contributed anti-war songs to Voices in the Wilderness. The 800 copies of this independently produced compilation album are beginning to make their way around the world. One copy has landed in Romania, where American Peace Corps volunteers, ironically, are using the protest music to teach English to Romanian children. While the songs were written when war still loomed, Voices in the Wilderness will prove relevant in the post-war reconstruction of Iraq as proceeds from CD sales will go to humanitarian groups with disaster relief. Hannah Lewis reports.
When millions of Americans took to the streets protesting the Vietnam War in the 60s and 70s, the popular music of the time reflected that dissident spirit. For example, right after the National Guard shot and killed four Kent State University students, Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young's Ohio blared out of radios across the nation.
This summer I hear the drumming for dead in Ohio.
Today's popular music stops short of carrying such strong political messages, thinks small-scale Minneapolis record producer Leo Whitebird.
That's not happening today. Our popular music climate is not conducive to that. It's very driven by marketing and, you know, commercial tie-ins and, you know, how can we sell this to this demographic and that sort of thing. But I've always felt that as artists, you know, it's our obligation in times like this to stand up and make statements.
That's why Whitebird decided to use his own studio to produce music that questions or outright denounces the legitimacy of a U.S.-led war on Iraq. And it's not the first time he's led such a project. 12 years ago, in the elder President Bush's Gulf War, Whitebird produced One Heart, Many Voices. This time, that original album is being re-released with a new compilation, Voices in the Wilderness, featuring 34 new songs written and performed by Twin Cities musicians.
When we started this record, I talked to artists and I said, look, you know, we're putting this thing together. I'm looking for songs. And I said, but they don't necessarily have to be about the war. I said, I want songs about the erosion of civil liberties. I want songs about the economy. I want songs about corporate accountability, you know, because it's all the same ball of wax.
On a cold weeknight in early February, Whitebird called the musicians to his studio to stuff the first press of 500 albums into sleeves, wrap them in album covers, and seal them in envelopes with a press release to be sent out to community and college radio stations, food co-ops, and peace and justice organizations around the country. Whitebird and many of the musicians see the CD release as a collective effort to prevent war.
It's very, very evident that really, I think a majority of the American people are not interested in going to war. And the more encouragement they have through positive musical and artistic messages, the better.
We need the gasoline.
The question Americans asked after 9/11, why do they hate us, echoed in musician Dan Radan's ear. He wrote the song, You Don't Know Me.
Anybody's the victim, you know, and it could be the relatives of people who were victims in September 11th, but it could also be people who lived in Afghanistan when we're going over there to, you know, bomb out bin Laden. And, you know, they don't have anything to do with this. And, you know, suddenly, oops, you know, the bomb went astray. You know, my house got blown up. And so, you know, anyway, you don't know me. You know, like, why did this happen?
Singer-songwriter Steve Call didn't think he was the type to write political songs.
But it's not enough to have your daddy standing behind you. You can talk real tough, but you're gonna need some friends. You talk about freedom, but I think you mean business. You have stretched the trust. You
but
have
a song inquiry into the psyche of President and former Texas Governor George W. Bush was deemed so fitting to the theme of the album that Whitebird placed it on the first track.
And I wonder if you ever got drunk after declining to stay in execution. Do you regret laughing?
What's behind this whole rush to war, this need to take things over by force, to mete out justice? It seems it would come easier if your heart was a little more hardened by maybe making the tough decisions, letting people go to the death chamber, you know? That's kind of what I was getting at. And once you become casual with human life, I think that it's a scary point to get to. You know, you need to be real careful about how you treat life.
All 50 plus contributors to the Voices in the Wilderness CD project came together with a common interest in music and a common concern for world peace. For Whitebird, music and activism have been linked since he was a kid. He grew up during the Vietnam era on college campuses because his dad was a professor. He says he became politicized at a young age, going to teach-ins and anti-war rallies, and helping the college kids organize politically by hanging posters and collecting contributions.
I have a very fond memory of the first actual concert that I ever went to without my parents. It was the Youngbloods playing in the Fieldhouse at Dartmouth College, and, you know, their big song at the time was, you know, come on, people now, smile on your brother, everybody get together. So me and a bunch of my friends were running around at that concert with big coffee cans and, you know, collecting donations for the strike committee and just feeling like, you know, gosh, you know, we're a part of this. This, you know, there's really something happening here, you know. We're not just, you know, listening to songs on the radio anymore. It's like, you know, this is a real thing.
Whitebird doesn't expect the CD to be played on commercial radio. The artists are only locally known, and he suspects the lyrics are too politically charged for mainstream stations. The musicians hang their hopes instead on the adventurousness of small independent stations to play their songs. They've launched a website for CD sales and also hope to make connections with local and international humanitarian organizations, such as Women Against Military Madness, Doctors Without Borders, and Another Voices in the Wilderness, which is an unrelated organization with the same name that sends humanitarian delegations to Iraq.
War is wrong. It makes you hurt inside to think that people have died for war. It's not our war, so fight it yourself.
Reporting in Minneapolis for Peace Watch, I'm Hannah Lewis.
feel to be free. I wish I could break all the chains holding me. I wish I could say all the things that I should say. Say I'm loud, say I'm clear for the whole round world to hear. I wish I could share all the love that's in my heart. Remove all the bars that keep us apart. I wish you could know what it means to be me. Then you'd see and agree that every man should be free. I wish I could give all I'm longing to give. I wish I could live like I'm longing to live. I wish I could do all the things that I can do, though I'm way overdue. I'd be stuck.
The music of Nina Simone, who died today at the age of 70. She'll be sorely missed. Pacifica's Peace Watch is produced in Washington, D.C. Our producer is Scott Gurian. Our editor is Lona Elias. Our engineer is Granger Helvey. Our associate producer is Angelique Shofar. We had production assistance from Jim Bennett and Adel Hamid of KPFA, Reem Kathuda and Leonard Muyai. Thanks to Pete Karakis, RadioForAll.net, and Shane Rock at WebActive.com for web help. Special thanks also to our consulting producer, Sam Husseini. Without your financial support, Peace Watch will cease to exist as of May 1st. It's your financial support that makes this program possible. So pledge your support through our secure online website at pacifica.org, or you can send your donations to Pacifica Radio, 2390 Champlain Street Northwest, Washington, D.C., 2009. I'm Verna Avery Brown, the executive producer. Thank you for listening.